You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
We love our friends at Oscar Blues Brewing Company. I mean, it's not like it's already enough that they make so many great beers. They were the first craft brewery to put their beers in the can, the craft brew in, of sorts, which was Dale's Pale Ale, really, really good. But they're also a supporter of OneOfUs.net. They are our really only advertiser right now, and you guys should support them as well, the subscribers. And you guys are the main reason we're able to stay alive. Thank you so much. Think about becoming a subscriber. If you like OneOfUs.net, it is those guys that are the reason we're still here. And I tip my hat to you.
Zach, won't you be my neighbor?
Oh, I'm your neighbor. I'm really right here.
Well, shit, there goes the neighborhood. All right, I'm moving out.
I'm
being gentrified by all these cinematic hipsters now. This neighborhood ain't what it used to be. We are talking about a little movie called Won't You Be My Neighbor, it's a documentary about the life of Fred Rogers.
Every time I hear it, I just sing it in my head.
You can't not.
Yeah.
No,
it's stuck
ingrained.
In your brain.
So, yeah, it's so much part of the culture.
You can't not remember that song if you were ever a child between, say, 1968 and 2001, because he was a fairly regular presence on PBS. This is the first biography that I'm aware of that's feature-length just about this man. And
so far.
Yeah. Now,
the Tom Hanks one's coming next year.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously?
I'm not joking about this. No, he's going to be playing Mr. Rogers.
Oh, my God. He's already played Walt Disney. What else is he going to do?
That's actually kind of badass, but now I'm, worried that this, really good picture that this documentary paints of him, they're going to find some dirt or, what's going
to
be a conflict
They're going to emphasize
it. He doesn't like doing, he stays away from, he doesn't like touching, really serious, hard subjects. You know, he left that 9/11 out of Charlie Wilson's War for that reason. He's like, I can't deal with 9/11 in this movie. No, Anyway, on that cheery note, let's get back to the movie.
But yes, this really is. I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. It is back in 67, I believe. Fred Rogers, who was an ordained minister, just took it into his mind to just start a children's show. It's a non-denominational, totally secular type show. And it is, if you've ever seen the show, it is very sweet. It is largely featuring Mr. Rogers playing multiple characters with little hand puppets, a few recurring guest stars.
Super low budget.
Very low frills. Very sweet. Very slow. It was sort of the antithesis of every other child's programming ever.
Oops.
And yet, in his own quiet way, he was somewhat radical.
Yeah.
You don't expect it, but he was introducing topics and really addressing it towards children who are, I'd say, between 4 and 6, maybe 4 and 8. Maybe that's the sweet spot for Mr. Rogers' fan base. As I said earlier, when we got out of the movie, I grew up with this, and I remember Mr. Rogers before his hair turned gray. This would have been in the late 70s, early 80s, and you guys are a little bit younger. Did you have any experience watching Mr. Rogers?
He was already graying when I saw him in 86, 87. I'm 36, so yeah, he was always an old man as far as I knew.
And we saw him in the 90s, and his hair was all white. That's how...
Yeah, mid-90s. I think they were also showing a lot of reruns during that time, though, because I definitely remember some episodes where it started off where he'd, put in the tape in the TV, and it would show an older episode where he obviously was younger.
I mean, even Mr. Rogers had to do a clip show every once in a while. He was an older man. He was getting tired. And I think not only just constantly producing, directing,
he did everything.
I didn't realize that he was composing all the materials. And then obviously as a kid, you don't think, oh, it's the same guy doing literally everything. So watching this was really eye-opening.
It was not a small feat by any means.
The puppeteering, the composing the music, playing the music.
Writing the scripts.
Jeez. It's pretty crazy.
With a pretty small team, and a pretty small but loyal team. One of the pleasures of this movie is, if you ever if you ever grew up watching this, you recognize characters like Mr. McFeely or and the various puppets. And to actually see them as real people out of character and just talking about how inspiring it was to work with Fred Rogers. And the and they touch on this in the movie. There is an assumption that it's an act. That somehow, you know, come on, nobody can really be this nice all the damn time. And what this film does is both address the fact that, no, of course this was a man who felt anger and despair and frustration.
He's human.
And yet, there was a deep core of sincerity, whether you were meeting him in real life or you saw him on a television screen. And I've met people and read numerous accounts over the years of people who ran into Mr. Rogers in person, and they're like, yeah, he's really like that. That's exactly what he's like.
Do you know what's funny? Watching this, it took me back to, like, that point where I, you know, where cynicism hadn't touched me yet. So where I was like, yes, of course, Mr. Rogers, he is like the epitome of, you know, positivity and everything that's good and hopefulness and, you know, love and kindness. So I don't know. I saw the image of him was always sort of like goes back to his place in my mind entire my life when it was like, yeah, there was no such thing. That like that was genuine. That was a real person who embodied that.
What comes to my mind after seeing this is just how determined a person he was to bring himself into the show and his beliefs.
It was a mission. It wasn't a money-making scheme.
Exactly.
There was a greater purpose.
Yeah, I mean, you see those sets. Like, no one's, like, it's PBS. It's, like, publicly funded. You know, they're not making all this money. It's just him kind of, like, pouring himself into this character. Well, I mean, not this character. Like, himself and making this show.
And that's ironic, though, that people saw that as fake.
Yeah.
That was, he was probably his most real and authentic self on the show than, you know.
Well, and that, I mean, when we talk about, they talk about those rumors and stuff in the movie, and Martin even said, like, before the movie started, like, oh, you know, I heard he has all these tats from all these people that he killed in Nam. And it's like when someone is, like, that good of a person, like, when someone is, like, so unbelievably, like, perfect in a certain way, like, he is kind of like a really perfect dude. He's just a really good dude that you want to like associate. No, that can't be.
People don't want to believe that somebody could be perfect because they'd only be disappointed at some point.
And I don't think Fred Rogers would have ever said he was perfect. I mean,
well, he was a Republican.
Yeah, well,
there you go.
But no, but see, the thing is that to me, this is where the film becomes relevant because you look at the current political climate, the current social climate, cultural climate, at any angle, and you think, how the hell would Mr. Rogers navigate these waters today? Because regardless of whatever he voted for or who he voted for, there was clearly a core message from the get-go about, you know, you should be kind. You should be nice. Everybody is special, and there is a value on human life. And the film does address some of the criticisms he's received over the years. This argument that, you know, this created a sense of entitlement amongst younger generations who feel like they're special without expending any effort. And now with that sense of entitlement has created a whole generation of spoiled, rotten, miserable people.
I
don't buy that argument.
The movie didn't eviscerate that dumb argument as well as it should have, like,
it
really
touched on it.
It touched on it, but it's like,
I don't think I think if you're watching this movie, you do not need someone to hold your hand and walk you through all the ways that argument is wrong.
Well, they let his own words speak for it himself. You know, they let him have the final say in that argument, which was part of that commencement speech he gave where he clarified, no, it means that you're special enough to feel loved by someone. It doesn't mean you sit on your ass and then you get the perfect job. Like, you're so amazing and perfect and special.
And his whole film was, or his whole series was kind of a response to, like, not only just being ugly and mean and cruel, but also, like, materialism. And just, you know, he was tired of seeing all of these. One of his arguments is that a lot of kids' programming is really just how to raise good little consumers.
Which is
the most capitalist thing you can think of, and yet to hear a rock-ribbed Republican say, actually, this is kind of bad. And in many ways, it's much more in tune with the teachings of Christ, but he's never one of these guys who's preachy. He's never mentions that. Like I said, it's a very secular show.
That's what I enjoyed about the documentary in general, was a lot of documentaries tend to have some kind of angle or some agenda that they're kind of trying to push. And this documentary, much like his show, wasn't trying to do anything like that other than just kind of spread this message of, like, you know, how to be yourself and be loved and love other people.
And exploring the world and trying to understand what everyday life was like.
Curiosity about other human beings.
Yeah, it makes me like, we get these like little cards and they're like, fill out this card, like what you thought of this movie. I'm like, this movie like kind of inspires you to be a better person in a way. Like you see someone who's like legitimately that good of a person, like, you feel like this guy like never talked shit. Like he was never mean to anyone. I mean, like, I don't know. It just makes you think like, man, I've done some shitty things. I gotta make up for that.
The difference is that someone like Fred Rogers probably, I am sure Fred Rogers at some point in his life just wanted to murder a motherfucker.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Fat Freddy.
But he
left a trail of dead others behind him.
How I could just kill a man, which was popularized back on the day when Fred Rogers introduced the song for the first time. No. But I think it's not about, like, in his own words, he's like, it's not a Pollyanna-ish thing. If you want to know what my comment was, I said, this is a balm for our troubled times. And it's a proof that sometimes kindness and love is the greatest strength. And right now, I think we as a society tend to frown upon those things. We view them as weak. That's another thing the film touches on. People are like, are you gay? Are you queer? Are you weak? I mean, what? Are
the
you
commentary
straight?
On masculinity was like so relevant to current conversation.
I mean, Fred Rogers is the complete antithesis of toxic masculinity, and yet without ever doubting his, okay, I'm going to tell you, let's talk about toxic masculinity. I'm going to tell you the one and only salacious anecdote I have ever heard about Fred Rogers, and I guarantee you this is going to be the only, this is exclusive. You will never hear this on any other podcast. Now, one of the things they show in the film is that one of Fred Rogers' daily routines was to go to the Pittsburgh Athletic Club and swim, and just swim a mile. You know, for almost all of his entire adult life, he wasn't like a physical fitness nut, but he daily went swimming. Now, when I was in college, this was many, many years ago, several presidential administrations ago now, and I was talking to a guy who was a member of the swim team, and they had to go to Pittsburgh for a meet. And while they were there, they went ahead and they actually practiced at the same athletic center that Mr. Rogers went to, and he was there one day. So, of course, these are all these guys who are my age, so it's like, oh, my God, it's Mr. Mr. Rogers. That's really him. And so this guy's telling me, who will remain nameless, because I've forgotten his name. And he said, so we did all our laps, we did all that, and then we had to hit the showers. Mr. Rogers is there. Holy shit, what do I do? And he said, I looked.
Oh my God. Aww. Oh, geez.
And let me just say, from what he told me.
For tattoos?
No tattoos.
Dude, hung like.
Let me put it this way:
Godzilla.
PBS wouldn't have to run all of those fundraisers if they were as well endowed as Mr. Rogers.
Oh my gosh!
Which is just another reason. And the thing is that I say that's salacious, but really, that's not like he was doing anything with it. I mean, again,
well, he had to at least twice.
It's just there.
Yeah, probably only
at least twice.
That's the only salacious thing you'll ever hear about Mr. Rogers. And you know what? He wasn't even doing anything. He's just taking a shower just the way God made him.
Well, thank you for putting that image in our heads.
Perfect the way he is. I had to share that because I've never told that story to anybody.
That's amazing.
Where have I ever had
a
reason
exclusive.
To tell that story?
No.
You're not going to hear that anywhere else, kids, and God knows.
You never hear about super sweet, nice guys having giant horse cocks. So this is starting a new thing.
Exactly. I'm just saying that's a win for the good guys. A friend of mine on Facebook a few weeks ago posted a meme. Which was, and I forget the exact wording, but it was the Rogers rule. He's like, ask yourself before you do anything. If you're not sure what you need to do, just think, would Steve Rogers or Fred Rogers approve? And pretty much, if you follow those examples, you're probably going to make the right decision. It's like, what would Steve do? What would Fred do? Take one of those two Rogers, and you probably have the right answer.
Can we throw Kenny into the mix?
Huh?
Can we throw Kenny into the mix?
Kenny Rogers. Well, you know, only if you want to gamble. So anyway,
Floor manager. We've got to talk about that.
Yes,
that's he was fucking awesome.
We should talk about. Yes, he provided some of the best laughs. You got to remember. Now, this started late 60s, early 70s, but some of these were young kids working in the crew with long hair and tattoos.
Who stayed?
Yes.
Then there's another picture of him.
And played great practical jokes.
The last day. He was still there, and he's still all tatted up with long hair.
And the thing is, they do raise the issue of a cast member who was at the time closeted. And how Mr. Rogers reacted to it.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers is like, you got to keep that in the closet. You got to keep that on.
And it's one of the gay bars. It's a chink in that armor. And it was more like, hey, you know, he had a hit show and he didn't want to lose all those sponsors. Even though, as his wife says, you know, he had plenty of gay friends. He didn't have a problem with it personally.
Dude, I'm not racist. I got a ton of black friends.
Yeah. Well, even the way he addressed racism. Again, this is how Mr. Rogers worked. And you have to put it in context. This was during the same period of time where black people were getting hauled out of swimming pools. And what does he do? He has a black actor who plays a recurring character of the local police officer. And he invites him to just put his feet in a swimming pool.
I love that. It's one of my favorite moments. I love statements that are made without ceremony. And that's just such a perfect example of that.
It's
one of the best moments in the film, I think.
Mm-hmm. When you have a fucking sock puppet ask an adult character, what does assassination mean? You're just like, how is this television? How did this get made?
But he knew that that's what kids were asking.
The Challenger disaster.
And they were asking their parents. And their parents were like, what do I say? You know, how do I explain this?
When he's talking about the Challenger disaster to children, I remember as a kid watching that in school live when that happened. Mm. The whole country, every kid was like, yes, this is great. And then you see that happen and Mr. Rogers, within a week's like, I got to talk about this. Mm-hmm. I have to put this on the air. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what his turnaround time was, but it got on the air pretty quickly because he knew that was current and people wanted to talk about it. So a guy who was timely when you figure he's kind of mired in the past, but in reality, he was frequently dealing with the latest issues, but doing it in a way that a child can understand.
But he's in a world that he created his own world, which is sort of like the physical trappings, which were sort of timeless in a mm-hmm. way, but it was always relevant to today.
How it also talked about like his struggle as a writer too, to try to stay relevant. He took that break. And then it also gets into, apparently, I didn't know this, but he did a PBS show where he interviewed adults.
Yeah.
And that was, like, what they showed was fairly awkward.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that there were, like, way more awkward clips. I, like, want to go on YouTube and see.
Look those up.
He talks to them like they're children, and they're just like,
Well, that's the thing that's...
Yeah, I like it.
Well, that was more philosophical. I felt he had the freedom to be more philosophical, but I think that
But most adults are going to be like, what the fuck
is
the irony of it is that kids are more apt to be philosophical than adults are.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, he was sort of stuck.
I mean, that is one of his things, though, is that sense that children can say profound things that as adults you learn to filter out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm as grumpy and jaded as anybody, but I've always said if you show me a bitter cynic, I'll show you an idealistic, you know, sentimental person who has probably been disappointed too many times. And it's very easy to just sort of construct this carapace of, you know, callousness and
this armor
and anger.
Like,
and Mr. Rogers does not do that. He seems incapable of doing that. And yet when you see him disarm people, even members of Congress, he manages just to cut through those defenses with his very simple, direct message.
He's probably just felt that, you know, nobody was worth giving up on.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
And it's like, I mean, I told Frank this because we were like the first people who got there. And I was sitting right next to him. I said, I'm going to warn you now. I'm probably going to be ugly crying through most of this movie.
Oh, I cried.
I might be sobbing. I'll try to keep it to a minimum.
First time everybody cried in the movie. I'm curious.
Oh, God. I don't even remember.
Like, I only cried once, but I was doing like the thing where I was like about to cry probably about four times, but yeah. I cried towards the end. I can't remember exactly what moment it was, but I managed to hold it until the end.
I lost track. It was about 30 seconds in. I think they started playing Be My Neighbor, and I was like, I lost it.
When he's addressing Congress, and I've already seen that clip like twice, it's just, it's crazy because that guy was, he wanted to cut funding hard, and you just see that guy just...
What a transformation.
Yeah. He's like, man, you gotta hurry up. I don't even want you reading that
he
shit.
He already had like 20 other people come in and testify.
Yeah, and he's like all ready to wrap this up, pull that $20 million funding, and then like just to see that turnaround.
Well, did you notice
really
how quickly
cool.
he engaged and how he became like enraptured with the way that Fred Rogers was speaking?
Just like the purity of him, the innocence.
Yeah, it draws you in. So I actually was kind of surprised when his chauffeured adults didn't go as well, because I think his whole his whole thing was every adult still has that child in them that's innocent that you can reach, and obviously it worked on the guy who needed to give them $2 million.
I don't know if it still exists today. I sometimes despair, and it was actually reassuring to me, like after 9/11, even Fred Rogers is kind of like, I don't know if I can even make a difference anymore. That's the magnitude
amount,
you don't want to see your heroes
His doubt is like, again, one of those things that really makes this movie, like seeing him doubt himself multiple times throughout it is just like, it's heartbreaking to see someone who's like so unbelievably talented at their game. Like he's like at the top of the game. He's the best that PBS has to offer. And he's just like, I can't do this.
But
like,
it's really relatable for someone who they're kind of building up to be like this entirely unique person who, you know, it's kind of a loner that not a lot of people can relate to. But in that, it's incredibly relatable because everyone feels that way.
I thought that was so smart, the way this film is constructed. I mean, it's typical, you know, stock footage, lots of clips from the show, lots of talking heads of like his wife, his children who have survived him, you know, ex-coworkers. But they don't really talk about the young Fred Rogers, except in like some little cute little animations. And then it's not until maybe halfway through the movie, I forget.
Talk about Fat Fred.
Then maybe you see like, now we're talking about his growing up.
Yeah.
They really spend a lot of time. It's not this sort of linear thing where like, here's this sad, miserable kid, and here's how he becomes the person he is today. It doesn't even present that. It's just, here's this guy. And then it's not till like halfway mark that they start actually going backwards and going, well, yeah, when he grew up, he wasn't really allowed to express his anger. He was quiet. He was sickly all the time. He stayed home a lot and quarantined and had to live in his imagination and was a rich kid.
It works at the film's...
The amount of empathy for a rich kid who had everything and lived his life in a single house without like going out and meeting people. How do you develop that empathy? It's amazing to me.
Well, he's Batman. Well, he was at... Well, yeah, that.
Victory has defeated you.
Well, he was asking...
Mr. Rogers would have never fought crime that way. He would have talked to the Joker. He's like, you look like you need a smile.
He was probably just interacting with every kid the way he wished he was interacted with.
Yeah.
You know, he was, you know, stuff that he wished he would have been asked.
Well, he's talking about so much of it. He's addressing childhood insecurities and treating children as adults and their complex emotions as on the level with adults. So a lot of it, I felt like it's like insecurities that he feels himself, especially after having heard his own insecurities that he typed after coming back to the show after doing the adult show, his adult interview.
Don't you find, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I love that moment, and you know, even the 9/11 moments, where it's really hard to see him sort of doubting himself, but it's also sort of beautiful to watch him be human.
And
on his deathbed too, you're just like, dude, no, I, You ain't no goat. Get out of here. Yeah. Like, come yeah, exactly. on, man. Like, don't be thinking like
nothing gets me more than humility. I love it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is, the man is practically a saint, and you know he's a saint because he would have denied being a saint. And I just wish we had the money to build a time machine and bring Fred Rogers back. And barring that, send him back in time and maybe talk to the young Donald Trump. Maybe somebody just needs to talk to that kid. Anyway, we probably need to start moving into some final thoughts, because I think we all like this movie and could keep talking about it. Frank, what do you have to say?
You know, I think as a documentary, it doesn't follow a linear, you know, pathway, which is great, because, I mean, I like, you know, this is where they were born, this is how they grew up, this is that one thing that happened to them to turn everything out. This film does what's really hard to do in documentaries. It gets the essence of the subject. It really... You really get a sense of, like, who he is and what he was about, and if he didn't already. But in a more, you know, more fundamental level, I feel. I love that his core philosophies were brought out. You know, I mean, he's just... he's so wise. I mean, listening to him say stuff like, you know, the best thing you can do for somebody is to let them know they are loved and capable of loving. I mean, gosh. You know, I mean, that does so much. This is a very, very sweet portrait of a very, very beloved figure, and I really love that it gets into his thought processes. It really gets into his mission, his objective, and what he devoted his life to, and why he devoted his life to it. It is one of the most, you know, heart-tugging documentaries, but also one of the most insightful ones come along in recent times. So I have to give this... I should have thought of something. Oh, yeah. 10 out of 10 trolleys going into the little card, whatever that thing is. And also, I gotta say, the first time I cried was later in the film when he was hugging Coco the gorilla.
Oh,
sweet.
Taylor?
As far as organization of the documentary, I actually found it a little bit jumpy at the beginning of the film. I had a hard time getting... on board just as far as the topics they were presenting kind of in rapid succession and how the timeline wasn't linear. But I think it gained its footing probably about a quarter of the way in. So it wasn't very long that I had that reaction to the organization. It started to make a little more sense to me. As far as themes presented in this film, like I had mentioned, I think it's a lot of super relevant themes, and I don't think that's an accident. I think that they probably were realizing how relevant a lot of his lessons and philosophies are to some of the things that we are going through as a country right now, as far as divisiveness and, like I mentioned, you know, masculinity and what it means to be a community. Mm. To create a better world. So I think just based on the relevancy and the themes presented, it's a really solid film that's worth seeing. I don't know if everyone's going to want to go to a movie theater to see this. It's kind of hard with documentaries. I just like going to the theater, so I'll go for whatever. but most people will probably wait till this comes out. I'm sure it'll be on Netflix or something like that.
Oh, the numbers will be through the roof for this.
Yeah, and that's totally, I mean, that's a solid choice.
Perfect world, it would premiere on PBS.
Yeah, oh. You know what? I bet they'll show it one day. That would be great. But I do think it's definitely worth seeing. For me, I mean, nostalgia is a really big thing right now anyway, but for me, it hit the nostalgia factor as well. So I think it was a really solid documentary. And of course, Fred Rogers is just like the most perfect human being. And it's great to see some of his early philosophies, being expressed just kind of on the fly. He's like sitting around playing a piano and like, you know, I think children need this. He's like, maybe this is too philosophical. It's like, you're so cool. Like, yeah. I want to be your friend.
You want to be,
I want to be his neighbor.
Yeah.
Opportunity missed. So yeah, my final meow meow is 8 meow meow, 10 meows.
Oh,
Oh, well, I really like this. I find documentaries hard to critique because, you know, it's like, what are we critiquing, the plot or the story or like the characters? No, not really. I mean, it's like this freaking Jesus Christ figure, you know, he's so perfect.
It has to be like what you learn from it.
It's like what I learned from it. And for me, it just feels like seeing this movie and the way it was presented, I thought it's not entirely linear, but it does definitely start towards the beginning of his career and it ends towards the end of his career. And I felt I really enjoyed that journey. I was totally in it. I have a little bit of nostalgia for Mr. Rogers, but not as much as anyone else here. Because I only got to see it when I went to my grandma's house because we didn't have that channel. And that was only in the mornings. It only played in the mornings.
That's right.
Get out of here. Yeah. So it was like only if we stayed the night at grandma's.
Should play that at 3 a.m. when you need it.
Yeah.
You've got to hold up the bar and you just hate life.
Yeah. Talk.
So
you need Fred there.
For me, I actually like the organization of it. I wanted a little bit more of that floor manager because he is so. of the people are very, very charismatic.
Wouldn't you like to see the two of them do shots?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But I feel like that like Mr. Rogers probably never even drank. You know,
no, I bet you he could hold his liquor. I just could see him pounding shot after shot.
Normal. He would just be like Wolverine drinking. It just goes. Let's just talk about superhero. Oh, okay. Why was there no explosions in this movie? Why did no one get turned to dust?
Hey, there actually was an explosion, though.
What? Oh.
Awkward.
9/11?
No.
Yeah. What? Well, the Challenger blew up, too.
Oh, the Challenger.
The Challenger shuttle blew up. Jeez. There was plenty of violence.
So I give this 9 out of 11. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God.
I'm just kidding. I give it a...
143.
I enjoyed it. Again, it's really hard to, like, give a number rating to something that feels like, man, maybe they're glossing over some of the harder parts. Like, man, he did tell that gay person, like, hey, you don't go to the gay club. Like, you don't go there show.
Right, how it made you feel.
Well, yeah, it made me feel 7 out of 10 childhood emotions.
There you go.
So,
there you
go. That's
I don't even have that many left. You know, we should point out, because you guys, it's interesting that all three of you talked about the construction of the movie, which is interesting. My nostalgia had me focused on the man himself. But we should point out that this is directed by Morgan Neville, who directed the fantastic documentary 20 Feet from Stardom. And this is not a flashy documentary, but he does use all of the tools to make this more than just a standard talking head reminiscence about a cultural figure. I've already said a lot of what I wanted to, and I think you guys have echoed some of the things that I felt about it. Being a little bit older, it hit me a little harder in the feels, so I probably am looking at it a lot less analytically. But the nostalgia, while there, really only, I think, helps bring up how relevant this still is. And if I feel any despair whatsoever, it's because I'm not sure that there are many Mr. Rogers left, or that they would survive in today's environment. And I think we need more of that
I think what he was mainly doing is saying, you know, it's up to you guys, up to you kids to, like, actually...
Well, and the way it ends is ties into what you're saying, because it doesn't glorify Mr. Rogers at the very end. There's a question that he says, like, who makes you feel good? Or, like, who is someone that brought you through a troubled time? Yeah. And it's all these different people that Mr. Rogers touched. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a powerful experiment, which, you know, where he basically says, just be quiet and think for a minute. Just spend a minute thinking about who's helped you in life and who's been special. And I won't ruin how it ends, but, you know, when you see all of those people have an intense reaction to just that simple experiment, which is worth, because every single person in the theater was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's rare when you can have a filmmaker. It's one, look, I'm an easy person to make cry.
Me too.
it really is. But, you know, the thing is,
because I understand enough about cinema to know how, you know, through editing, through performance, through musical choices, all of that, you can elicit a response from an audience, whether it's an awe moment or a crying moment or just a jump scare, which is why I resent when I'm being manipulated so cheaply, because it is a cheap trick.
Yeah, don't throw emotions at
us. You know, when you do that and you're just trying to like, oh, we're going to get this sucker. I'm like, God damn it, you made me cry and you did not earn that from me. You did not deserve my tears. But this movie did, in the best possible way. Mm. I give this 10 out of 10 grown men crying.
Yeah.
Choking up now.
Choking up. I want to know Richard crying.